This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Paul, I think I can help people if I just get my hands a little dirtier.
Are you trying to be careful? Huh? Or are you just gonna burn your career and take me down with you?
Coin flip.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land. This is PB&B Shrinks, a Ted Lasso to Shrinking fan cast from NPR Illinois, Community Voices, and the Front Row Network. I'm your host today, Craig, joined by my illustrious co-host, Mr. Jeremy Gechner. How are you, sir?
What's up, guys? Sorry for the delay, but, you know, stuff happens. What are you
getting? Like, I feel like at the beginning of every episode, we end up apologizing for the delay in the posting of episodes. But, you know, life happens, and we do also have other shows that we get to. So, but we are committed here to get you some more content from Shrieking, because I loved being able to talk about that first episode and be able to establish these characters and sort of start off on this new venture, on this new journey, this new show that we have. It's been really fun to be able to do that with you.
Yeah, I'm loving all the interactions here, and I'm loving diving into this show again, like after watching it the first time and just seeing so many of the parallels and like how the productions are done, just like on the, like the cinematography and the music especially. It's like, it really is kind of like a great little companion show to Ted Lasso. So I'm happy we're keeping it going, and now that we've established the characters and stuff, we're gonna get really into like the meat of like what the philosophy of this show is about, especially here.
Yeah, absolutely. So you get to really kind of, as you were mentioning, they're established. We get to like kind of discern some of those relationships as well. We get a best friend to join the party,
yeah!
Right? And Brian in this episode. So I'm excited.
Best character of the show so far.
Now, I got to say, I mentioned that we are going to be doing some additional, things when it comes to being able to interact with our audience as well. And so the way that we're going to do that is by coming to you at the beginning of each episode with some of your responses to the last episode, and that's in a segment that we like to call Shrink Wrap.
Hey, that's the Shrink Wrap.
This week on Shrink Wrap, it is kind of a delay since we had the first episode, so I went out to our PB&B Facebook page and posted it out there and tried to get some reactions from you, and I gotta tell you, Alyssa put in such a wonderful sort of,
yeah,
at times heartbreaking and also just really insightful post about losing a spouse and being a youngish widow person. And she's got some responses back on that too. She said some amazing things in there, and I think that it's better for you to just go and read the whole thing. But she just talks about how this show really is able to focus on, and especially we're going to talk about it in episode two, but I thought her comment about when Brian and Jimmy are talking about why Jimmy stayed away from Brian for a while, I think it's insightful that she was saying that, yeah, it is difficult at times to be around people that are cheerful when you're grieving so much and so hard for someone that you've loved.
It really does get to the crux of the show. And, you know, as somebody who went through something similar when I was a lot younger than I am now, it reminds me of a scene in The West Wing. I know we're just going to keep doing this, come back to The West Wing stuff, but it reminds me when it's an episode where Leo's on getting questioned in the House committee, and he's explaining what happened, like when he got drunk during one of Bartlett's debate preps, and he has a line in there where he says, like, everybody, like, what it's like, people don't get it. It's like, get away from me. That's what it's like. And it's kind of like, that's what it reminds me of when we get to the end of this episode here, that, you know, so many times our interest is to try to cheer people up and to try to like be there for them, but sometimes they just don't want anybody near them, and you just need that solitude, as we're going to talk about in many forms here. So Terry, thank you so much for writing that, or Alyssa, thank you so much for writing that in, and whatever you're going through, whatever you have, you know, we hope that we can give you just a little bit of levity in that, but you know, everything definitely doesn't go our way though, so you know, there's that.
It doesn't necessarily do that, but you know, I think that if you've got the friends to pull you through, it's always a good thing to have as well, and a great community over in the PBB Facebook page. So make sure you check that out if you haven't already been part of that, moving through all of Lasso and now as we get into Shrinking as well. Betsy also mentioned that she was just talking about the loving relationship between Paul and Jimmy, which we get to explore a bit more in this episode. We get some really funny moments out of that relationship. We're going to continue to get some really funny moments. So I'm excited to be able to talk about that as well. But that's all that we have for Shrink Wrap this week. Next week, make sure that you do go ahead and let us know, or next episode, I should say, go ahead and make sure that you give us your responses to episode 2 as we move forward here and explore more of Shrinking. I do want to mention, Jeremy, because this is a Ted Lasso 2 Shrinking podcast, before we dive into the episode, I do have to say that you and I had just a tremendous experience at the beginning of November going to Thunder Gong, and it was incredible. It's fun to see. It's really fun to see all of like the videos that were put out by Steps of Faith. And thank you to those of you that helped donate to our Steps of Faith raising money as well. We really appreciate that. But it is fun to see those videos and be like, oh man, we were there. And you know what's funny is that so we're hanging out with AJ Cataline, who we had the chance to be able to meet and to go out and get beers with beforehand. And then we just kind of hung out at the whole concert. And AJ just turned to me like after Hannah did Shallow. And he just goes, "You were here to see that live." Like,
we were here live.
It's funny because then all of a sudden it's all over everywhere on social media the next day or whatever when Steps of Faith uploaded the official video of it. It got picked up just by about everybody. And it was so cool to be there. I have to tell you, it's a wonderful the work that Billy does with Steps of Faith and his whole staff. But it's also really cool just to be in an environment where you just get to kind of like see these folks that you really have come to admire be able to just kind of let their hair down and have this variety show. So I can't enough tell you that if you are a Ted Lasso fan and it is in your budget, or you are able to get to Kansas City, Missouri around the time of Thunder Gong, you need to do that. Like, you really do. And I think it's something that we're going to be going back to for sure. And hopefully, you know, in contact with Billy, he gave us a great interview, and in contact with him to do even more, hopefully next year, to help out and support Thunder Gong. We're just this little podcast that could hear, but whatever we can do to help give people the ability to have these limbs that they need in everyday life, you know, whatever we can do that, I think is something worth doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's $800,000+ made that night for the foundation. And my favorite moment of that night, aside from any of the performances, was like when that number got revealed, I looked straight over at Billy at the drum set and he was overwhelmed by the generosity of everybody there that night. And it really was just fun and just a lot of like really weird things. Brendan Hunt shaving his beard right there live on the stage. Was not expecting to see that night. The amount of skin of Sam Richardson that I saw, that was fun. But there's just so much stuff that like really goes in there, and it's a really fun environment. And I think if I remember right, Billy said they're really trying to get a bigger venue next year, and Lord knows they probably need it, because we had people walking up and down asking if there were extra tickets while we were waiting in line. So definitely, let's make this event even bigger and support that Lasso family, everyone.
Yes, absolutely. So now what we get to do is we're going to jump over and we're going to talk all things Shrinking episode 2, The Fortress of Solitude, which we know that reference, don't we?
Yeah. It's familiar to me. It's ringing a bell.
All right. Well, let's find out what's on your mind.
But how does that make you feel?
All right, so I'm taking the recap of this one. So it's been a second, first of all, folks, since I've done a recap. So if I fumble over my words, apologies in advance. Jeremy is so good at these recaps and coming up with them. You've got to see his notes, because like his notes for these recaps are so great. They're put into like paragraphs. They're more of like a narrative form. Mine, I should share like a picture of my Google Doc, which is just me frantically typing at the screen while I'm watching this, and then maybe pausing and then rewinding and then going back and typing more, and then you know, making some things bold so they stick out. Like, that's my process. Jeremy has a much better process than this. That's all to say, you're stuck with me. Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. We open up with Jimmy being alone at the corner booth table that he has in his house, and he's imagining Tia is in the hallway and the lights are all off. And then suddenly the light flicks on and it's not Tia there, but it is Alice who's turned on the lights. And basically they talk for a little bit before Alice is getting ready to go to school that Jimmy's going to be bailing out Sean because of the fight that we just experienced at the end of episode one. And Jimmy reminds Alice that he's going to be meeting with her guidance counselor later on. And then he asked her about maybe doing dinner with him. And she says that it is Taco Tuesday, which we have a wonderful gift of gab coming up about that, I'm sure, later on as well. But then Jimmy says, love you to her. And I noticed that it isn't returned from Alice. And Liz is going to take Alice to school. So this is another one of those, like, you see Liz actually pulling up with Alice at school. So really this episode, more than anything else, I think starts to paint the fact that Liz is really kind of stepping in to fill that parental role. We got that certainly in the first episode, but this one really puts that storyline on Front Street. But thoughts about the beginning of this episode?
Yeah, we're getting the sense that Jimmy is starting to come out of the unseen, you know, stupor he's been in for a year. He's trying, he's making an effort. You know, he's not kind of numb to everything that's around him anymore. He understands that he needs to be there for Alice. I do really appreciate the way they do the kind of Tia Alice switch there, because, you know, it is one of those things, is just like, you have to think that when it's not, and it's an absolutely inadvertent thing, but like when he sees her, he sees his wife, his dead wife and stuff. And that is hard. That is a hard thing to wrap your head around. I mean, you hear that from everybody, like when it comes to spouses and that have died or who have left children behind as well. It's just like, man, I look at you and I see her. And that's something that Jimmy's going to have to contend with here. You know, I don't think he puts it quite that way there, but like, this is something that he's going to have to make peace with in terms of how he's going to be able to interact with Alice going forward, I think. And yeah, I do love that, you know, aside from Liz, you know, jamming out to the Talking Heads, which we'll talk about later, it is one of those things that Liz, like the way Krista Miller is usually like plays characters in anything, there's a certain sense of like, I don't want to say meanness, but just like this edge to most of her characters that she's played. And then this one, like, we get that sense of that, but I love how they flesh her out throughout the remainder of this episode too. Nobody is one dimensional in this show, and I absolutely love that.
They humanize her so much later on in this episode. It's that, it's that conversation that she has with Gabby, but we'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there. But I love, I really come to appreciate what Liz is trying to do here towards the end of this episode, for sure. But now, one of the things that I think this episode does more, does better than maybe even any other episode in the whole season, are these conversations and these sidebars that we get to see with Paul and Jimmy. So we get our first one here before the credits roll. And then Jimmy kind of just talks about how he's trying to approach Alice and he's trying to take his recommendations and he's trying to do all of this that Paul's saying that he should to make sure he reconnects with Alice. And he tried to offer her dinner, but she's not going to do dinner because it's Taco Tuesday. And then I love, and I know I'm stealing maybe potentially a quote here.
No, but, we should do it.
But it totally, like, Paul is just like, well, of course, it's understandable. You've been trying this approach for nearly 10 minutes. So I love that. He's just like giving it to, like, he's one of those mentors that you could tell everything that he says, Jimmy hangs on his every word. And I appreciate that. We all need someone like that in our life that can just really give it to us honestly. And we will just sit there and take it, even if it's something that we don't necessarily want to hear. But Paul mentions that you have to wait for people to be ready to be there for you as well. So Alice is going through something extremely tragic, and she's been grieving the loss of her mother, where you've been grieving the loss of your wife, and you have to be there when people are ready for you to be there, because that's what you do for people that you love, is what Paul says. And of course, then we get this nice dialogue back and forth. But one thing that Jimmy doesn't do, he actually goes out of his way to make sure he doesn't do, is he does not tell Paul that he's bailing out Sean. So this is right before he goes to the actual police station, and he's at the police station. He's actually making up the fact that he's grabbing donuts for Paul. And we find out that Sean didn't call his parents to bail him out because he didn't want to tell his parents. And then he asked Jimmy about if he knows any lawyers. And Jimmy just happens to have a best friend named Brian, who he's been avoiding for the entire year. So we get to finally meet Brian, and then we get our opening credits. So that's kind of the Paul and Sean and Jimmy of it all. Any thoughts before we get to those opening credits?
There's just a real great sense, like, and you're right, like the relationship we're really seeing now between Paul and Jimmy is just like, so I love like the quick paced verbal, like jousting that all of these characters do with each other. But especially them. And you're right. Like he wants so much, Jimmy wants so much instant gratification from like trying to like actually reach out to Alice. Doesn't work like that, my man. Like you're gonna have to try way, way harder to get that going there. And I love that he calls him out there, but yeah, call out specifically Michael Urie here as Brian. Have you ever seen a character just make like such a great instant impression on you? Like I literally love this guy immediately, like just everything that he's saying there. Cause again, there's like that quick-witted like sarcasm that comes out. Like when Jimmy finally like blurts out hello and he's like, well, that was normal, you know? And I just love like the style of conversation that we get here. But you immediately understand that like, this is a good person. This is a person that wants to be there for his friend, just from like the way he speaks and the way he freaks out over that phone call finally happening. And so, yeah, I love that this new character, and we're going to love him even more as this episode goes on.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we get that wonderful opening credit scene. If you want to hear Jeremy's soliloquy about how amazing that opening credit scene is,
Frightening Fishes, sure baby.
Go back to our first episode for sure. We then come into sort of the wait, or what is it, like the lunchroom kind of area or break room, I guess, is what I'm trying to search for.
Yeah, break but room, I guess.
Gabby and Jimmy are trying their ample best. They first start having a conversation, and then Paul walks in, but they're trying so hard to not tell Paul about what happened to Sean and something about non-grippy shoes that caused a black eye. And they move the conversation, though. They kind of sort of, as therapists do, drive the conversation from talking about Jimmy's black eye to talking more about Paul and to finding out about Paul's daughter in particular. And they're like, hey, we don't even know anything about your daughter. And he's like, she lives in Connecticut. And that's literally all.
Oh, it's like she's in the room.
For sure. And of course, that is where we get the Fortress of Solitude quote from Paul, that his family is his Fortress of Solitude and that he's not going to talk more about it to any of them. And then we see Jimmy going into his sessions now. He's talking to Grace, who, as you remember, the cause of the fight, she dumped her boyfriend because of, or was it her husband? I can't remember. Is Donnie her husband?
But only
her
husband. He's like awful.
Yes. Sorry. And so she has left Donnie at least temporarily because of what Jimmy had told her to do, and that she's been doing much better. She's hanging out with her sister. Jimmy's also hiding the black eye that he got from the soccer match from Grace as well. He's trying to like move the Zoom screen around so she can't see it. And then you see him more at additional counseling sessions, and you see him with his patient who's being mad at the barista because the barista has the gall to interact with him at all and ask anything that's a small talk related. And so it's funny because then that's a way for Jimmy to then lean into his own loneliness and start to explore sort of what he feels as far as his loneliness is concerned and how empty his life is. This leads Jimmy to take Dan, the patient, to the coffee shop. He tries to engage with the barista. That being, Jimmy tries to engage with the barista and Stan, the barista, Dan and Stan. I like it. But Jimmy kind of like encourages Dan to give it a try, and they find out that the barista and Dan both have a shared hatred of oat milk, and that's something that they're able to bond over. But talk to me about these scenes, Jeremy, from all the way from back in the break room up until you see some of these more interactions where Jimmy's doing what Jimmy has decided he's going to do, and that is to really become part of his patients' lives.
Yeah, this is like the interesting push-pull between like the ethics of this show and like the morals of the show, so to speak, because like when we watch what Jimmy's doing, it seems like such a natural thing, right? It's just like, you know what, these people need help, like do it in any way that you can. If this is going to be the most effective way to do it, then, you know, therapeutic the ethics be damned, like, you know, like go and do whatever you need to do that. But then like I feel like the show is going to do a pretty good job of balancing these out, because even though, like, you know, Jimmy is finally helping Sean, for so to speak, as well, and even though he's helped Grace, there are potential downsides to that. You know, there are potential downsides to, you know, being the person that pushes them, because I think Paul even says in the last episode, it's just like, they need to make the choice to get better. If you're like the one choosing for them, then it's just another person taking control away from them. So I do love that he's a little more gentle in how, you know, from what he did with Grace, although I could argue Grace needed a little bit more pushing. But like with Dan here, he's, you know, kind of just giving him, was like, come on, you know, like interact here. And I do love that, like, it appears like there's a breakthrough there, but when Jimmy has to leave, it's just kind of like, what the hell, man? You know, so maybe Dan's not quite there ready for it yet. But yeah, with Gabby, Paul, and Jimmy, every interaction that these guys have is gold, like absolute gold. So just live in them, people, and enjoy them.
The chemistry between them is just so great. And the fact that, you know, when we were talking to Luke about how they go about filming the show, there's absolutely some improvisation going on, but that like Jason really shows up to work kind of knowing his stuff as Jimmy. And I feel like it's just like you get this amazing mix of a person who's so clearly very passionate about this show in Jason, having been one of the writers and the producers and being able to almost being like our Jason Sudeikis, you know, our Ted Lasso for this particular project. So he's got a lot in this, a personal investment in this. And then you have this like sage actor like Harrison Ford, who can just insert himself so dryly into every conversation and just make it so like just elevate the level of comedy that comes out of it. But also allow for the level of heart as well to really be something that is just huge in all of these scenes. And then you've got somebody like Jessica Williams, who is, you know, hopefully going to win lots of Emmys for this role at some point. And she's just incredible as Gabby. And you, she brings that comedic edge. She really is unafraid to like explore and go places as an actress that I absolutely love. Like she puts herself out there, and her character is this like awkward therapist who tries to really be so cool. And so, and then a lot of times she succeeds, but there's other times where she completely falls flat, and she like kind of like leans into that in these conversations. And it's just so amazing. But we do have to get going, much like Jimmy had to get going to see Alice's guidance counselor. Of course, Liz is already there, and they've already started without Jimmy because they weren't sure if Jimmy was going to show up. He hasn't shown up the last several times. So Liz is really filling in and acting as the parent here. And this is the most clear example we have yet of someone outside of the family relationship experiencing that Liz is truly acting as the parent for Alice. Alice has dropped off the debate team, so her guidance counselor is a little bit worried about that, but she's doing that because of women's soccer. So Liz says it's not a big deal. They shouldn't be worried about it. They talk about some of the small liberal arts colleges that Tia and Jimmy had taken her to in the past year prior to Tia's death. And you got to see kind of Jimmy come to life a little bit with that. He nails the names of the colleges that she was interested in, and he feels pretty proud about that. So Liz is sent out. But then, of course, the guidance counselor asks about AP scores and which AP classes she's going to be taking. And immediately they call Liz back in because who knows which AP classes she's going to be taking. And so they're brought back into that as well. And then you get to another like little quick recap scene with the three colleagues, and they all encourage Jimmy to stand up to Liz and basically tell her that, hey, he's the parent.
He's the mama.
He's the mama. I mean, we're stealing all of our quotes here, but but he's the mama. And then you then cut to a scene that is at the courthouse, I'm thinking. Is that the set piece that we're at here where they're trying to deliberate
courthouse,
this?
Lawyer's office, something like that.
It could
that.
Just be a lawyer's office, but they're in some kind of conference room, and Brian is discussing the assault charges with Donnie and saying that he would encourage him to drop those charges because there's about 30 eyewitnesses that saw him come after a very well-reputable therapist in the community. And then you do get to see that they do, in fact, drop the charges. Donnie is not going to press charges up against Sean. And so they all celebrate out in the parking lot. And that's when we start to hear some of Brian's mantra as well, which will become a running theme, not only in this episode, but throughout the entire series. But that's a lot to dig into there, Jeremy. So I'll stop right there for a second. What are your thoughts about, you know, we finally get to see a little bit more of Brian. We see Liz in a way. Some would say Liz is overstepping, much like Paul and Gabby tells Jimmy. I also think you can absolutely argue that Liz is filling a hole that she knew that Alice needed while Jimmy was kind of stepped away. And so I don't know. Thoughts about that?
It's an interesting dynamic, especially with what we learn about Tia when it comes to, you know, how her and Gabby talked about Liz as well. Is it's interesting because, you know, Liz is clearly like doing a good thing here. Essentially, she's stepping up when there is no parent there and Alice needs a parent. And so she's been that person. And we even get that too, like when her and Derek are talking later, he's like, ah, the kid we didn't want, you know? And, you know, so Liz is clearly like going out of her way to like do this and to make it so that, you know, somebody is there for Alice. And so you would think that that is a nice and heroic thing, but it's even more in my mind because when you hear like, you know, how her and Gabby or how Gabby and Tia, like, you know, are describing her kind of disparagingly as like a quote unquote mom, you know, one could think is just like, okay, well, forget this family, you know, I'm not going to do anything there. But it really speaks to, I think, Liz's character there. And so, but there is also, I think, some kind of vested interest, but she's the kind of person that is never going to admit what she really wants. You know, I have a feeling like there's always going to be like a little bit of space between like her real feelings and the feelings she lets people see. But yeah, I just love that, again, though, Jimmy is understanding the limitations of his current position, so to speak. You know, like, yeah, he's coming out the other end, but it's not a light switch. It's a process that you got to get on there. And I like that he's going for it. And yeah, again, Brian is just the bomb. I mean, like the way he does this, the joking nature with which he has Jimmy like fake headaches and stuff like that. It's a really, really funny scene, but at the same time, it's just like, yeah, Donnie, like your lawyer didn't tell you that like you can't just go and punch people for no reason. I mean, I know there's a reason, but there's no physical provocation there. So yeah, you're in the wrong here, dude. Like you're not gonna win this fight. So again, a really great way of endearing Brian to us, and then also showing though at the end of that conversation, trying to get him like, okay, you know, you're back. Like, right. We're talking again. Like, let's go play pickleball. Let's go and do all this stuff. But Jimmy still is just like not there. And I love the simpleness of Sean just saying like, what did you do? And he just goes, I don't know. And it's just one of those things that's going to set him off in an upcoming scene here. But it is just, again, we love this person. We don't understand why Jimmy would not want to have this person around. And I love how they slow walk us to that at the end of the episode.
And, you know, I have been kind of fortunate in my own life that like when I need let's talk about like me going through the divorce last year. Like I'm someone that is extroverted in all of my life. And so I feel like I reached out to so many people for help and messages and just constant like talking through things with me during that time. And that's what I needed. Like that's how I processed that grief of a relationship ending. And you know, life kind of changing and everything. But I wonder if like, for me, I think it's easy. And I say this and I don't mean like I'm not empathetic towards people that have a variety of mental health issues. I try to understand so much more than what I put out there and what works for me. But there's sometimes where I think like depression or grief can be really hard to understand for someone that isn't going through that or doesn't experience grief in that way. I'm so much more public in my grieving, right? And so I don't know that I would ever classify myself of having a time where I was clinically depressed and wanting to retreat from the world. And so like, I'm the Brian in this situation, I guess, and so what this show is going to do over time is be able to sort of unravel what it is that depression kind of looks like in different people. And the understanding that, and this is something that Alice is going to kind of understand hopefully better towards the end of the season as well, is to say that like, no, your dad really couldn't help that he needed this time away, that like he really couldn't, you know, he has so much other things going on that we're going to find out throughout this series with his relationship with his dead wife and everything else that we, you know, it's an onion, I guess, is what I'm saying. This show does a good job of like presenting that from a perspective where like you can understand as an audience member that there's different types of grief and there's different stages of depression and that there's different experiences that we all have, but we all should at least strive for some of that empathy towards those individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things that, you know, it kind of speaks to like how Alice talks to Paul, you know, in that next scene there, when it comes to how you process grief and, you know, what you want to do and what you need to do. I mean, Alice does, in a way, she feels isolated too, you know, like, you know, her friend's trying to get her to come do this big party thing, but it's, you know, she's just kind of like, I'm not really interested in that. And Paul rightfully calls that. He's just like, yeah, you've gone through something that like most people won't ever have to go through in terms of like so young or so tragically and stuff like that. And it's one of those things, just like your perspective shifts, your priorities shift. And so, yeah, these things don't really matter that much to you anymore. And so it is kind of one of those things of like different people have different ways of doing this, but they do need each other, but they just are not ready to kind of admit that yet, because both of them, whether through, you know, circumstance or choice, have had to grieve in their own way. And now they're having to come back together again, but it's a harsher process than they're thinking it'll be, I think.
Absolutely. And you are such a better host than I. You went right into the next scene.
You teed it up right there, man.
I love these park bench scenes that we get with Alice and Paul, just kind of explaining things, and like how Alice is like, I don't like therapy. And he's like, these are just conversations your dad can never know about.
Yeah, can never know about.
I love that too. So I think you did a good job of kind of summarizing that particular scene on the park bench, and we're going to come back to it later. And there's definitely some quotes in there that I want to mention later in the episode too. We go to Jimmy explaining magical thinking to one of his patients.
Yeah, this is cool.
This is the patient that is basically thinking that if she looks at the clock, she then has to hold her breath until the minute changes, or else something bad might happen to her. And this is where Brian barges into the session. He's mad at Jimmy. He says that he's going to pay for the ladies' session, but he's just like, he didn't confirm that he wanted to go to pickleball with me. And like, how do you walk into my life? And then now you're just like using me, and then you don't say anything for you. I mean, he just lets him have it, and he calls him rude, which I appreciate. The great word
for that circumstance. Really right. Great.
Like, I like that, because like, you know, he was going off, and I mean, like, it's like one of those things. So one of my friends in high school, he realized, you know, this was back in the day when, everything was this, that, or the other thing. And we use some terminology that like today wouldn't be PC either, in terms of like growing up, everything was gay. Right. And then he was like, you know what, when, he said, you know, like people say that all the time, because it's just like the 90s, 2000s. That's what people are saying to classify everything. But he started saying things were dumb instead. Like, well, first of all, it's a better explainer, because who cares if you're gay or not, right. You know, but also like the fact that like you use a word that you're not expecting to be used in that like way.
Yeah.
And then it kind of stops somebody in their tracks. And so you don't expect Brian to use the word rude here, but he absolutely describes what Jimmy is being. And perfect. I think it lands better, because you're not expecting, you're expecting a harsher word, I guess. I don't know. Am I making any sense here, Jeremy?
Yeah, it's because like, it's one of those things, like it's a conscious decision to exclude somebody else's feelings, isn't it? Like being rude, you know, like it's literally your conscious choice to like not care what anybody else is thinking or what anybody else needs. And so by him saying that, like, you're right, he's on this tirade. He's like, it feels like he's ramping up to something, but then he stops and he's just like, you know what? No, you're just rude. Like, you know, you like, I've been trying, I've been reaching out to you for a whole year. Like, you know, we were best friends. We spent all this time together. And then at this moment when, you know, I want to be there for you the most, you won't let me be there for you. And it is just one of those things. It's just like, how could you be that inconsiderate of me? Now, essentially, that is a selfish thought as well, which we're going to confront later at the end of the episode. But in his mind, like it is one of those things where Jimmy, I think he's prepared for like harsh language, but he's not prepared for like real language. And I think that's where he gets caught off guard here, and why it hits so hard. And just real quick, the tumbling over the coat stand is just such a baller move. Like, just going back in the room just to throw the coat stand over. Just excellent. No notes, Brian. An incredible tirade.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so fantastic for sure. And so then we move on to Liz tumbling her rocks. We find out about those. And she talks to Derek about Alice coming over for Taco Tuesday. And then we get this conversation between Gabby and Liz. And Gabby comes over with this just kind of like bullshit excuse that she's going to be giving them a basketball because Alice wants to get back into basketball. And she tries to tell Liz to back off of Alice and quit being such a helicopter pseudo parents. And she tries to do it in a way that is going over, you know, kind of like trying to speak around the actual issue with Liz, but Liz isn't buying it. Like immediately Liz knows what she's talking about. And then she talks about, like, Liz talks about this conversation that she overheard with Gabby once, where Gabby said that Liz was, quote, such a mom. Mm-hmm. And Gabby's like, well, that's not a bad thing. And she's like, you didn't mean it in a nice way. Like, and so you start to see that Liz has some humanity here, that she really does feel like she's trying to do best by Alice and best by Tia in a way too. I think that she's definitely has some of her own empty nester type of things going on with a lot of her kids going away to college. But at the same time, it made me feel more like I can understand where Liz is coming from and trying to feel justified that she's really parenting or stepping in to parent Alice here. We do then see that Paul finally finds out about, he found out on the park bench, I should say, from Alice about the soccer match and about Sean. So we get the scene where Paul is telling Jimmy that he really screwed up. He says that Alice is the most important person in Jimmy's life, and he's going to screw it all up with her. And he makes him promise that he's going to work on that relationship. And then, of course, Jimmy tries to hug him and walk, and Paul walks away from it. And that is a callback to earlier in the episode where Paul is saying he doesn't want to have this conversation with Jimmy because he's just going to try to hug him or whatever. So I liked that they did a little bit of a callback there.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Especially the scene with Liz and Gabby, is it gets you a great sense, again, like I said, of Liz's selflessness. But again, the complexity here, like when you're hearing this, just like, you're right, there is an empty nester syndrome because we see her tumbling rocks. That's what she's doing, right? It seems like an inherently like aimless type of thing, you know, like she's just sitting there like this is what she has, right? And you know, not that tumbling rocks is bad or anything, but it's just kind of like, you know, for somebody who's being a de facto parent, like you'd think that there's like a lot more things to do there. But you know, she does have kind of, I think, a little bit of a hole in her life that she wants to fill because she has this emptiness now. And it is, though, inherent on them, though, to understand that Liz is probably stepping up in a way here that is of merit, but I don't get the sense that it's like for lauds or anything like that. I think she really does honestly like care about Alice. You know, they've grown up next to each other probably for a while. Her kids probably grew up with Alice. And it's one of those things of like, you know, doing a selfless thing, but then just kind of like getting called out for doing that selfless thing because it's no longer needed. It's like, it also not a light switch, doesn't like work like that, you know? So yeah, I like that. And of course, again, just Paul being the mentor there and with a fantastic line that will do for the gift of gab. But yeah, these are still continuing to be really, really great scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's amazing how quickly these characters have started to come together already and be able to see how they're all relating. We do starting to come towards the latter part of the episode here. We get an extremely quick scene with Sean and his brother and his family, and his family's going to kick him out of the house. They're willing to give him money, but they say he's out. And Sean, of course, is not going to accept their money. At this point, we then see that Alice is going to bail on dinner with Liz because she's decided she is going to try, much like Paul encouraged her to on the park bench, and that she's going to try to have dinner with her dad. Liz says no big deal, but then when you look at it, Liz has got like this whole setup for Taco Tuesday, including some of the rocks that she has tumbled. And we find out, of course, that Liz really appreciates the people that she gives these rocks to. She really does value and appreciate. So it's a big deal that they're left on her plate. Jimmy decides to go to pickleball and he's leaving as Alice comes home with some chicken sandwiches for dinner. She lies and tells him that it was actually dinner for her and Liz. And then he says, you know what, I will cancel in a heartbeat. You tell me and I'm done. But she lets him go. Alice brings the chicken sandwiches then to Paul, and Alice starts examining his fortress of solitude, I said, because she starts looking around and seeing pictures of his daughter and her family. She tries to get into the photo album, all of that. And then I also love that you see a glimpse that Paul is drinking from Gabby's water bottle, because he has found the water bottle that she left in his office. And that was from a little bit of a callback earlier to a scene where that's where Paul and Jimmy are talking, and they're talking about the whole Sean situation. And Paul says, hey, is this your water bottle? And so you get a little bit of a callback there. So even like they're interweaving these storylines so well.
They do good.
Almost, dare I say, two episodes. My microphone is falling apart.
Oh no!
Dare I say, doing a better job of subtly weaving in some of these Easter eggs and things than even our good friend Ted did.
Oh my God! Blasphemy! Stone him!
No!
The similarities are so great, and obviously because look, Brett Goldstein wrote a lot of Ted Lasso, and he wrote a lot of Shrinking. So it's like one of those things of like you can see how they like weave these things in. You don't need to draw great attention to them, you know, like it's just there. It's right there in the scene. If you want to take the meaning from it, that's great. And again, going back to what Paul said earlier in this episode to Jimmy, you have to be there when they're ready for you to be there. And again, Jimmy, I think he would have made the decision there, but I don't know, maybe Alice knows subconsciously that he really does need to like go to pickleball because he says, you know, I'm going to play pickleball with Brian. She would clearly know that he hasn't hung out with Brian in a year, that, you know, that's such a big part of his life that he needs to get back. So maybe she is being a little selfless there in terms of like saying like, no, it's for me and Liz. There's probably definitely though, like it's probably like 1585 and the 85 is probably, you know, rejection and like pseudo pissed at like, you know, oh, you know, he's going to do something else. It's like, you kind of have to tell him though, and I love that Paul doesn't let her off the hook for that either. So again, like nothing is done without purpose here, and everything gets called out when it should get called out. And so yeah, I think the again just like really, really good writing.
Yeah, I completely agree. So let's end up this episode, man, at the pickleball court. Brian asked Jimmy, they're playing pickleball, they're having a good time. Brian asked Jimmy if they're ever actually going to talk for real. And then Jimmy says, not tonight. And then poor Brian, he just leaves the other pair because he just sets down his pickleball racket and he just takes his ball and goes home for a little bit.
The guys are like, I guess we're done playing.
Yeah, exactly. But they do have a conversation outside of the pickleball court. And it's a very important conversation where basically Jimmy was saying that Brian was almost too there for him and that he just needed to feel miserable. He needed to hit rock bottom. He says this amazing thing about the mantra, everything goes my way, that Brian likes to say, and how you just don't want to be around the kind of person that is saying that when your wife just died. And quite the amazing retort but from friends after that. But that kind of gets back to what Alyssa was talking about in our shrink wrap segment, that this conversation about how like you sometimes you do just need to be by yourself and to be able to grieve, and that having others around you that are like that, having this like kind of optimism going on or saying that everything is going their way, is something that is maybe something you can't handle in the moment. Yep. And that you just need a second away from that. And in this case, you know, Jimmy needed a year, he felt like, away from Brian. And he probably needed more than that. And in his own mind, I don't know that he would have contacted Brian had Sean not needed a lawyer. So here we are. But then we go back to the house and Sean is waiting there while Alice comes in the door, and basically Jimmy explains this is Sean and he just needs a place to crash for a while. And then that's our end credits for the show. So talk about this last scene.
Yeah. All of you therapy people out there, or therapists or therapist adjacent professions out there. Yes. Put your red alert sirens on, because wow, unethical, you know, to have your patient living with you. But then again, he's got nowhere to be. So again, it's like a great little push-pull here against like the morals and the kind of ethics of it, and how those kind of have to overlap sometimes, you know. Like, I don't think anybody's gonna, you know, blast Jimmy for, you know, giving Sean a place to stay, but it is kind of one of those areas just like, but should you let him stay there with you in your house? So I don't know, it's one of those things that other people can go over. But yeah, it's a great conversation there though with Brian and Jimmy, especially where, you know, I think that Jimmy has a point, you know, like when you have somebody who is, as Brian calls himself, like human Zoloft, you know, you have to weigh that sometimes. And again, like I said, with like Leo McGarry in the West Wing, it's like, get away from me. Like, you know, like that's what it's like. And like, sometimes you have to be by yourself. You have to feel that emptiness so that you can remember that there's something else there, you know, like so that there is something else on the other side of it, because otherwise it can all blend together. And then the things that do bring you joy might lose that kind of meaning forever. And so I think, again, a very important conversation to have here when it comes to the idea of grieving. But, you know, naturally, because we're dealing with a comedy or a dramedy, we bring it back to like that. But at the same time, that line is so important for Jimmy to understand, that it's like, Brian can be there for you. He can tone it down, but he still can be the one that like pulls you out of that grief a little bit. Kind of like in the opening sequence, how you see like that person reaching down to like pull somebody out of a hole. Like that's, I think, what Brian can be for him. And I think Jimmy is finally understanding that when he makes that little joke there. It's just like, it doesn't have to be 100% happy or 100% sad. It can be somewhere in the middle, you know? And that's, I think, an important lesson for Jimmy to learn here.
I completely agree with you. I think that I can't wait to explore this relationship between Jimmy and Brian even more, because I think it's different. Like, we're getting these different layers of relationships, right? So we get to see this relationship between family members, relationship between patients, relationships between colleagues, and relationships between friends. And so I think that we all know that we have different dynamics with the different people in our lives. And this show is doing a good job of sort of weaving those things together. It's almost like Jimmy wants to interact with everyone on the same level, and he needs to kind of almost learn how to human again a little bit and be able to figure out like how to interact with different people based on where they're at in his life too. So, but a great episode, Fortress great of episode. Solitude, episode number 2 of Shrinking, and really enjoy being able to break that down with you, buddy. But now we've got a couple of other segments to get to before we head out of here. First things first, I think it's time to go to some rocks, some Liz rocks, right?
That's right, everyone. Liz rocks. Let's talk about some music. A shorter playlist in this episode, only like 6 songs, I think. But first one, Psycho Killer, Talking Heads, an amazing group from the 80s. You might remember most of their songs. Their bigger songs like Once in a Lifetime or Burning Down the House. So, but this is a great little like just 80s jam here. That's really great. Yes, Baby One More Time, Britney Spears, is technically on the soundtrack for this because it's ringtone. Okay, fine. You want to get that one in there.
So do you think that that was a special ringtone for, I was thinking about this, is that a special ringtone for Jimmy, or is
that's
that Brian's
question.
Is that Brian's go-to ringtone? I can't that's remember because it's been a minute since I've watched the series in full, so I don't even remember like if that's answered later on or not.
Yeah, well, we're gonna watch for it now. So that's pretty good. But look, if you want to objectively talk about that, it's a pretty good song actually when it comes to like, you know, pop queens of the early 2000s, late 90s. But then some just like more broad, like kind of like really indie California based rock stuff. So These Are the Days by Inhaler, really good, and like nice kind of harder rock, like something of the Killers variety. You got this is a hard one to say, Sjogren with 17, a really great little bop there. And this is the second time now in 2 episodes that we've gotten Vampire Weekend on the soundtrack, this time with This Life. That was the song that they were playing during Pickleball. Again, a really great little like California jam tune. Like you would imagine like driving down the coast, like listening to this song. And then we end on the Do You Want to Talk by the Circa Waves. A really, really great kind of closing thought for this episode, because again, it's all about like kind of, the song is all about kind of like figuring out the dynamics between two people and figuring out, you know, like, should, you know, like, you know, is this the right time to say this? Is this the right time to do this? It's a really good little encapsulation there. So again, Krista Miller, wonderful job picking the songs for this episode. And we're going to get some really fun ones in the next one.
I'm really excited about that, but let's get to the gift of gab.
Holy shit, I don't want to know that. Actually, I do. What? Oh my god, I'm sorry. When I get nervous, I start just saying just stupid shit. And that's what's happening right now.
Yes. For those of you following along with us since our Tedisms days, yes, this is where we go back and relive some of our favorite quotes. And this, I'll tell you, this show, much like Lasso, it's like every line of dialogue you could,
it could be.
You could basically throw out here. But I'll go to you first since I host this episode. What is your first gift of gab?
Yeah, I mean, I guess since he's calling out my boy Gary Oldman here, I mean, I got to try to do my best Gary Oldman impression here. But I cannot condemn you to live in the bowels of hell for all eternity. I love you too much. Guys, Gary Oldman was great in that movie. That movie is a little problematic in terms of quality, but like Bram Stoker's Dracula, Francis Ford Coppola, pretty, pretty good. Watch it only just to see Keanu Reeves' British accent, because it's pretty insane.
I love that. This reminded me so much of like how much of a dork Jason Segel is too. Yes. And like so much of his interactions. But like when he wrote Forgetting Sarah Marshall, he had that whole like Dracula yeah, the Dracula musical at the end of it. And then like some of the references that he just made, like even improving as Marshall in How I Met Your Mother. Like, this guy is a certified dork, and I love everything
nerd.
About that.
Nerd
yeah,
central.
For sure. For sure. And the next one for me was when they're talking about Taco Tuesday, and Jimmy says, ah, yes, my favorite vaguely racist weekly food holiday.
I'm just sure.
No notes. No notes there, no for notes. Sure.
Yeah, I'd go to the when they're in the break room the first time, and like Paul was talking about how, like, you know, like, I'm not antisocial. I just, you know, like to keep to myself when I'm at home. And Jimmy goes, like, I'd argue that's the definition of antisocial. So that should be a shirt.
You also forgot that when Jimmy's trying to get out of telling Paul about Sean, and he's saying he's going to pick him up donuts, but he can't pick up donuts now because there's too much police action around it or whatever. And Paul just goes, oh shit, now I want a donut.
Now I want a donut. As do we all, everyone, anytime you think about it. And then, of course, as he calls his like home the Fortress of Solitude, Jimmy says, Fortress of Solitude should be the name of your memoir.
It's just I love awful. That. I love it's such a little one and it's so quick, but they're trying to show that Jimmy's running late to the guidance counselor, and he's running into the school and he just screams honk at someone. Oh, it reminded me so much of Whistle, honestly.
Yes, it has to be. It has to be the same vein as that because he's just literally yelling honk at somebody.
Honk!
Whistle!
Yeah.
The one that I wrote down is kind of like a normal one, but like with Liz and Gabby are having their argument, and Liz is rightfully calling out Gabby, saying like, you're the godmother, like, where were you in all of this? And she says something about like, I had my own stuff, and Liz literally in the best way is just like, oh right, because none of us has stuff. You know,
so yeah,
once again, just kind of everybody's usually in the same boat in just different degrees.
I thought that Paul dropped a bunch of knowledge on the park bench, but one that particularly hit me was the conversation he has with Alice, and she's explaining about like her friend Summer wanting to go and drink under the bridge and all that. And Paul says, they're immature, they're teenagers, they haven't been through what you've been through. And then Alice responds, well, then they're lucky. And then Paul says, for now. And that's interesting insight, because basically what he's trying to convey to her is that everyone is going to go through these moments in life. And the fact that you have gone through this tragic event so young, you're now going to be resilient or more resilient than some of your immature teenage friends that don't understand what you're going through right now. And so I thought that like you could say that it's like a pessimistic tone, but to me, like it's more of like a him conveying that she can use this to be able to build up some of that resilience, that we're all going to have the challenges in life. So you need to be able to work through those.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, really great line there. I'll go straight comedy here, because when Paul does finally confront Jimmy about Sean, he says, why would you lie to me? And Jason Segel, perfect delivery, just like, the truth was just so bad.
Yeah.
Man, identifies so much.
There's probably more quotes than this, but the last ones that I have is where Jimmy is just talking to Brian and he says, I'm not trying to make you feel bad, but it's not fun to be around someone that says everything goes my way when their wife just died. And without hesitation, Brian delivers back, I never said everything goes your way.
Your way?
Like, I mean,
rightfully, that like, is Jimmy out of the stupor, because it's a ridiculous thing to say.
That is. Only something like that line right there conveys to you the fact that these two truly are best friends, because there is no way that line works or is received the way it's received by 99.98% of the people that could say it, you know. And Jimmy immediately, like you said, it brings him out of his slump a little bit, makes him laugh, and they of course say that they love each other. So what a great episode, man.
Really awesome.
Like being able to go back and watch this show again, I think I said this is the fourth time through for me. It's been a trip so far in these first two episodes, and I'm so excited to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, ditto. This again, like just the depth that we get to with these characters right off the bat in these first two episodes, I'm really looking forward to seeing how this like extrapolates out and stuff, and like the complexity we really get into with these relationships. Now we've really kind of established that there's like three-dimensional characters. Now let's see how we can flesh out their interactions with each other.
Absolutely. So it's been a great time getting to chat with you. If you are brand new to Shrinking, and PBB Shrinks, then make sure you go back and listen to all of our episodes of Shrinking, which there's been only a couple, but you could definitely listen to all of our episodes of Ted Lasso as well back on the feed. Follow along with us on social. Make sure you go to PBBFRN on X or Twitter, whatever you might want to call it. And then also you can go to the Peanut Butter and Biscuits Facebook page. That's where we do a lot of interactions and there's a lot of fun that goes on in that group. So definitely go and check that out. And that's how you can really contribute to the show as well. If you don't social and you still want to contribute to the show, make sure you go out to frontrowlasso@gmail.com and send us an email. And then you can also, of course, give us a rating on Apple and we will read that review on the air in the next episode as well. So go ahead and check that out for us as well. Any final thoughts before we get out of here, Jeremy?
Not really. Maybe if you're nice guys, we'll do a little special mini episode on Hannah's Christmas special. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, I will tell you.
We don't need to break that one down every time. That could be like 10 minutes of like, which song did you like?
that could be a really nice Christmas treat for the audience for sure. Yeah. I'll tell you, I absolutely loved being able to watch that, but I made the mistake of watching it while we still had our screeners for it. And
yeah.
I literally could talk to no one about it. And I was just like, oh my gosh. It was great giving a chance to talk to Shrinking with you, buddy, but we will be back soon with our next episode. Until then, for PB&B Shrinks, I am Craig.
I'm Jeremy.
And we still really have
no clue. Don't have a catchphrase.
How to end this show. We just said that's what we got.
Yeah. That's it. That's it, guys.
Checks out.
Yeah.